This is the No Gray Area Podcast, discussing all things sports. Now, here are the hosts, Derek Cooper and Kevin Smith.
And we'd like to welcome you again to the No Gray Area Podcast. Derek Cooper and Kevin Smith are back to talk more sports with you guys. We covered a lot of football yesterday, a lot of college football, pro football, a little bit of boxing, a little bit of baseball in there as well. But today is going to be a very football-heavy show. We're posting this on Thursday, so an opportunity to kind of preview some of the weekend's games, get an opportunity to talk some of the storylines that are going on at this moment, both in the NFL and college football. A very touching story in college football, tragic, actually, that we'll touch on a little bit later. But first thing I wanted to touch on in this podcast is rumors have surfaced that Jerry Jones has kind of installed himself on the compensation committee that is supposed to be negotiating the agreement to extend Commissioner Roger Goodell's tenure as the commissioner of the National Football League. And my question about this topic really is, does Jerry Jones have a right to be involving himself in league matters such as that, considering that he's kind of at odds with Commissioner Goodell at the moment, with his star running back potentially being suspended soon?
So you're saying should he or should he not be involved with this whole thing that's going on?
I just feel like there's a massive conflict of interest here for him to be involved in determining if Roger Goodell should stay in power, which from what we've heard, a lot of the owners are quite happy with Roger Goodell kind of being the front man for the NFL and kind of taking the heat for stuff that the owners want done. And so there's a reason why he's making 30 plus, even up to $40 million in salary per year to be the commissioner of football. So I just think it's questionable timing for Jerry Jones to be involved at all with the negotiations for his contract to be renewed.
Well, Jerry Jones is on his hustle, man. He knows exactly what he's doing, and you can't get knocked a man for his hustle. So is Jerry Jones allowed to be involved? Absolutely. I mean, is it conflict of interest? Probably so, but nothing could be proven. So is Jerry Jones want to get on Roger Goodell's good side to either get Ezekiel Elliott back faster or not lose him at all, then more power to him if he's able to get it done.
Yeah, it just seems like it's very questionable timing. For one, the fact that there is an ongoing situation with the Dallas Cowboys star running back and the league. It's just really a situation where it's just not a good look. Jerry Jones supposedly was representing the other 26 owners not on the compensation committee. Well, my question is for the NFL owners, why do you have a compensation committee to begin with instead of just having it done amongst all of the owners, making that decision to where maybe it's a majority vote that approves the contract or not? So that just it makes it interesting to me as the dichotomy of how the league owners handle these situations and how they have committees to handle, you know, an issue that should be a relatively small issue. Yes, obviously people are going to think that Roger Goodell hasn't done a good job or that he's not doing a good job. Personally, I think that he's done exactly what the owners pay him to do, which is take the heat for ownership's decision-making and ownership getting their way and ownership being hardliners at the negotiating table. Roger Goodell has done that like you would expect someone to get paid $30 million to do that does. I mean, he's pretty much been impeccable at doing that. And I think that this cry for a new commissioner is kind of far-fetched considering how much the league's popularity is now, how much their revenue is, and just how things are going for the league as a whole.
Right. And I mean, he's doing exactly, I feel like I've never really had a problem with Roger Goodell. Like you said, he's doing exactly what he needs to do or what he's supposed to be doing, just taking the heat. And I don't know. I just feel like everybody's not going to ever be happy, you know, and most of the time people are just looking for somebody to blame. So who do you blame? The person that's in the front, pretty much. And I don't have a problem with Roger Goodell extending his tenure there. He's doing a fine job and he's doing exactly what he's getting paid to do.
Yeah, and I think he's doing I wouldn't go as far as to say an excellent job, but he's doing a pretty good job.
Oh, no, no. I would never say excellent. I mean, he's doing exactly what he's supposed to.
He's fitting the job description, which is take all the heat publicly Let the owners kind of sit in the background and just make sure the NFL's shield doesn't get tarnished. And that's what he's...
Get paid $30, $40 million.
To do it, yeah, and not complain about it.
Not a problem. Not a problem. I will be the commissioner. I will do the exact same thing. Blame me. Yeah, okay.
Well, talking about that, there was another issue this weekend that happened with the Dallas Cowboys. In particular, they got drummed by the Denver Broncos in Denver. A standout play that happened from that game was an interception that was thrown by Dak Prescott. Chris Harris was the one that intercepted the pass, but the notable thing on the play as Harris runs the ball back, I think he was eventually tackled inside the red zone, was that Ezekiel Elliott was maybe 4 to 5 yards away from Harris and just stood there and put his hands on his hips. And didn't give any effort towards chasing him down, trying to make a tackle, anything like that. So this is on top of the fact that Ezekiel Elliott had, I think, 8 carries for a total of 5 yards, maybe, for the game.
And I think he had 8 yards total. I think
okay,
he was
so,
like eight,
so 8 yards
eight altogether. Yeah.
But the bottom line here is that this is the first time, I think, that we've seen in college and pro football for Ezekiel Elliott where he faced some adversity, and it just speaks, I think, more to his character that things aren't going his way. He's had a bad game. The pick gets thrown. You see everybody on the team running to try to tackle the guy that has the ball, except for Ezekiel Elliott. And so do you think that the Cowboys at this point have to kind of make an example out of Ezekiel Elliott for this? Because this is the kind of thing that I think, obviously you played more football than I have. You went further on in your football career than I did, but this is the kind of thing that when you see this on the film on Monday, that's something that if it's not corrected or not at least something brought attention to about a star player on that team, that you could really divide the locker room based on how you handle this situation.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's definitely not okay. When you look at something like that, guys, you know, one thing that you cannot coach, and Ray Lewis said it, you can't coach effort. And any play, you're supposed to give 100% no matter what's going on. I don't know what the score was. I don't know if Ezekiel Elliott just kind of lost, you know, himself within that game. He's like, I'm not having success. My team's not having success. So he's probably got to the point where he was like, why bother chasing them down? And you should never have that mentality like that. Yeah, it's definitely going to be addressed. Do I think it's really going to affect his playing time, or is he going to have to do – is something going to happen as a result of what he did? I don't think so too much because, I mean, he's such a big staple of the offense, but that definitely needs to be addressed in whatever film session, whatever type of practice or anything, you know. You need to get on his ass for that because that's unacceptable.
Yeah, I think that at minimum, as the coach of the team, Jason Garrett has to say something about that situation in front of the team that, hey, this is an example of what not to do in this situation. You know, we're only as good as our weakest link. And no matter if you're having a great game or a bad game, your job is to give effort every time you're out on the field, as much effort as you have. And so,
now, okay, I'm going to stop right there because at the same time, I get what you're saying. As far as him doing it in front of the team, I'm not 100% in agreement with that. They really need to pull him aside and let him know, you know, that this, what you're doing is not acceptable. You need to give effort every single play and pretty much kind of let them know that even if you're not getting enough effort, you're not going to get on the field.
Okay.
Now,
but
doing it in front of his teammates is going to, you know, I don't know what type of mindset he's going to be in, whether he's going to be like, you know, F it, or he's going to be like, oh, I need to get my stuff together. You never know what type of reaction you're going to get. But when you put somebody on Front Street in front of the whole team, you're definitely going to divide the locker room, and you don't know how that player is going to react to that.
Okay,
he could rebel. He could, you know, go the way you want him to go, but he also could rebel and be like, you know what, bump this. I don't even care.
Okay, but my thing is that this wasn't something he did in private. This wasn't an infraction that against team rules or whatever, against curfew, that he did in private. This was on the field with your teammates, with your brothers, and you don't feel good enough about your brothers when you're having a bad game to put forth your best effort on the field for every play. What does that say to the right guard that blocks for him every time he carries the football? What does that say to...
I get what you're saying, and everybody already knows, but for you to go back and just to bust him out again in front of the team to kind of...
But he hasn't been busted in front of the team, as far as we know. I mean, obviously, we can talk about it. I mean, we don't impact what the team is thinking or what the team is doing. You know, most people say that people don't care about what goes on outside the locker room. So the question is, inside the locker room, does Jason Garrett hold accountable... if not one of his best players, if not his best player, one of his best players, specifically for just a lack of effort and a lack of care for his teammates?
I mean, he's going to have to hold him accountable. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott should hold him on, his own self accountable. But like I said, I don't think that it's going to affect his playing time very much. I mean, anytime you got somebody who does stuff like that and they have a, you know, a very tried and true, well, the, between the starter and the backup, there's kind of like a closer gap, then, you know, you can work it in and kind of make an example out of that, saying, oh, you keep not giving effort, this guy's going to play a lot more, you're going to play a little bit less, you know. But when you got a player like Ezekiel Elliott that is so far ahead of the guy behind him, it's not going to affect his playing time as much. They're going to have to talk to him about it, but it's not going to affect much of anything.
I never once was like, hey, he should be benched for a series or a quarter or no, that was not ever what I was thinking. I was thinking that in the team meeting room, when you have your entire team in there watching film, or your offense watching film, or however it's handled, you've got to let the offense or the team know that that behavior is not acceptable, even by the best players on the team. And I think that's why it's necessary to not necessarily call him out in front of the team, but you have to specifically let your team know that this type of behavior, this type of action on the football field is not tolerable by the coaching staff or the front office, even right. by the best players on the team.
Like I said, I just don't know what type of person Ezekiel Elliott is and how his mindset is going to be affected by whatever. You know, I mean, me, I was a completely different player. So, I mean, if I messed up, if coach was to call me out on it, he would say something to me, I would go back and apologize to the team myself. Now, right. I don't know if Ezekiel Elliott is that type of player, and I don't know how he would respond if Jason Garrett was to put it up on the big screen in a full team meeting room, whether it just be with the offense and defense or with just the offense, to where he's like, you see this, and put a laser pointer on him, we can't have this.
Hey,
you
know? And this could be a defining moment for not only the Cowboys this season, but the Cowboys going forward. Say you hold Ezekiel Elliott accountable and he doesn't respond well to the criticism or the accountability that you are asking of a player of his stature on the Dallas Cowboys team. We've already had this discussion. They're very deep at running back. They have Alfred Morris. They have Darren McFadden there. They are serviceable at this point. We've spoken long and hard about how it's very easy to get a really good running back in the third round of the draft, third round, fourth round of the draft. Foreman is a case for the Houston Texans. He looks like he's going to be a monster drafted in the third round. So my thing is that these types of players, yes, you spent a high first round draft pick on Ezekiel Elliott. The first year was the honeymoon year. Things were smooth sailing. Everything went right. Nobody could really stop Ezekiel Elliott behind that offensive line. That created opportunities for Dak Prescott to have a lot less pressure on him. He didn't really have to carry the team throwing the football. And then the second you see some adversity where Ezekiel Elliott doesn't have an easy time running the football and the offensive line isn't making holes that you could drive a Mack truck through, then you have, okay, well, he doesn't, the run game gets shut down, and now you're facing a good defense that has a good secondary. And how good is Dak Prescott really? Because he really wasn't able to carry the team on his shoulders throwing the football on Sunday. So now you have the question of how good is Dak Prescott? Can he be the type of player that if you need him to wing it 35 to 40 times a game to get a win, can he pull that off? I don't think he can. I think he's very limited. I think he benefits from a lot of looks where you have to, you know, bring an extra defender down into the box to shut down the run. And then he's able to play one-on-one on the outside, and he has some pretty decent weapons to do that. Cole Beasley's very elusive, very shifty. And Dez Bryant, while he may not be the Dez Bryant of old, he still has the ability to separate, and he has the ability to make plays down the field and be a physical receiver. And so it's just a situation where maybe this defines the Cowboys' season. Maybe if they don't handle it the right way, if Ezekiel doesn't handle it the right way, then maybe There's some fracturing in the locker room, and we'll see how Jason Garrett handles that. They could bounce back from this, become a stronger team from this. You know, Ezekiel Elliott can become a better player from this if he handles it the right way, if the team handles it the right way. So it'll just be interesting to see how this situation is handled moving forward. And, I mean, I think we've seen enough out of Ezekiel Elliott's character both on the field and off the field now to evaluate that he has some very big character flaws. He has some very big questions in the character department. And how much does the team kind of start evaluating the negatives off the field and now the negative on the field when things aren't going well, considering that what does he bring when he's on the field and things are going well for the team?
Right. I mean, you know, it just gets frustrating for a guy. I could vouch to this, that it gets very frustrating when you have so much success for a consistent period of time, and then when you battle adversity, you don't know how to react to it. And I think that's kind of what's going on. And I completely agree. I think Dak Prescott is a great player. He's a pretty good player, you know, but I didn't think last year that he was just a good enough quarterback that everybody was making him out to be. I thought he was a pretty decent quarterback, and he had such a good running game to lean on. And whenever he was able to throw the ball, he was efficient and everything like that. But I think that people made him out to be a lot better than he actually is. So I really didn't think, like I told from the beginning, even last year at the end of when offseason started, I don't think the Cowboys were going to be that great as they were last year. Mm-hmm. But we're just – It's just going to be a defining moment because Ezekiel Elliott, he put up 100 yards in every single game last year. I think the first game he got close to 100, and then now he battled adversity and he just seemed like he's trying to give up. And plus he has a lot going on because he knows he has a suspension looming. He's got to deal with this at some point. I don't know if it's messing up his mind, if he's thinking about other stuff, and football's kind of like the second or third thing he's thinking about. I mean,
in the NFL, it can't be that way. In the NFL, it has to be football first.
I absolutely agree. But like I said, we don't know where Ezekiel Elliott's head is at right now. He has a lot going on. You know, he has a lot of things he feels. I don't know if he's feeling frustrated about what's going on the field. He's not having success, or he's dealing with a lot of stuff off the field where he's got these charges, you know, his suspension looming. You know, there might be something in the locker room that we're not seeing. You never know what's going on in that locker room because, I mean, players fight all the time. I've been on teams plenty of times where guys have fought and you could kind of tell that they were at each other's throats, but they try to put it aside on the football field, but you still could see it. I mean, you never know. It could be a lot of things that's messing his head up. And, you know, having a frustrating game like that probably just didn't make it any better.
Yeah, and like I said, you hit the nail right on the head. They have a tougher schedule this year. They're playing a first-place schedule. I think they benefited a lot last year from playing a last-place schedule in their division. And so their competition is tougher this year. They have teams that they're playing. I think they have to play the AFC West, and we all can agree that that's the toughest division in football.
As of right now.
Oh, no. I think at the end of the year, that division is the toughest division in football. And it is right now. I mean, those teams aren't going to change. I mean, you're seeing the Broncos win with defense, Trevor Siemian's being serviceable, and then you're seeing the Chiefs, who we all thought were going to be good. They, especially now that they have a running game and a running back that's serviceable in the since Jamal Charles was let go in the offseason. And then you have the Raiders and Derek Carr. He's back. He's not. He looked every bit of the Derek Carr we saw last year in the first two games of the season. So I don't see the Raiders slowing down at all. I don't see the Chiefs slowing down. Alex Smith now is playing for his job, and he knows it because they have drafted the heir apparent to Alex Smith. And so I think you're going to see a very tough AFC West, and I think that those teams that have to play the AFC West, specifically the NFC East, will have a difficult time going and playing those games and getting wins in those games for sure.
Right. I completely agree.
So we move from one running back to another. Eddie Lacy this weekend was a healthy scratch in the Seahawks game, and I wanted to ask you in particular. We've all known Eddie Lacy has been a career underachiever. He was in Green Bay for a while. He never really took the reins of the starting running back job there. He was given opportunity after opportunity to succeed there, and he just never seemed to blossom. And so now in Seattle, he was healthy but did not play on Sunday. And now I have to wonder if this is the beginning of the end for Eddie Lacy's career in the National Football League.
Because, well, Eddie Lacy, he struggled with his weight. I mean, he's been fat. He's tried to lose weight. He hasn't been able to stay healthy, whether he's had, you know, leg issues. I think he hurt his ankle.
Hey, fat is a very, very strong word here. All right.
Okay.
Overweight. Chunky. He's been not chunky. In the best football shape. That would be the best way to describe that.
He's been chunky. Okay. We've all known it. Eddie Lacy's been a chunky guy. He's been, yeah. But, I mean, he's dealt with ankle. I think he hurt his ankle that put him out for a few weeks. He had some success in Green Bay in particular, you know, games. And you know, do I think this is the beginning of the end? Possibly. I think that he's going to have to get his body under control. He's going to have to get serious about getting his weight down or getting in better shape if he wants to, you know, extend his career a little bit. I don't think he's going to be in Seattle after this season. I don't even know if he's going to make it through the season at this point, if he's going to be a healthy scratch in week two, you know, because they have so many good running backs over there. They got who else? They got Rawls, and who's the other guy?
They got Rawls. It's not precise, it's they got Rawls. They got, I think, Christine Michael's still there. And then they have the new kid, Carson. That guy is a monster. Pete Carroll was singing his praises, and he gave him the ball a lot last week. I don't think any running back on that team is going to have a significant impact on the season, considering how bad that offensive line is. And basically, Russell Wilson's running for his life for the most part. And we'll get into offensive line play here in just a second. But, yeah, I just... Eddie Lacy's had opportunity after opportunity. He can't figure out, you know, what is the appropriate weight to play at for the running back position in pro football, and I think that's going to spell the end very soon, if not immediately, for Eddie Lacy in the National Football League.
Yeah, and it's a possibility that he might not even make it through the season. I don't know if they're going to cut him, they're going to release him. I don't know what they're going to do, but he's going to have to get his body under control. If he doesn't succeed in Seattle, he might get one more chance with another team, but I'm not 100% sure.
And so moving on from the Eddie Lacy discussion, I wanted to talk with you a little bit. We just touched on the Seattle Seahawks and their offensive line play. There have been a couple of offensive linemen that have played in the league that have come out and said that the lack of padded practices in training camp and throughout the season are what has contributed to offensive line play being, I would say, down across the board for the most part. You know, even the Dallas Cowboys offensive line, they're supposed to be the best offensive line in football, and they were not doing too well on Sunday. So, do you think that there's some validity to this statement that the lack of padded practices could contribute to the offensive line kind of not being in sync and not being able to finish blocks early on in the season?
Yes and no. Because anytime you have an unpadded practice, you're definitely trying to save your legs and you're trying to prevent injuries and you're definitely giving your body a rest, which is an essential part of making it through an entire season. But at the same time, when you're playing offensive or defensive line, you have to have that physicality there. You have to train your body to know how to, you know, push people around, know how to lean on people are going to lean on you. So you're just missing that physicality. So it is a hindrance and it also is a benefit. But at the same time, I think it's more of a hindrance at this point when you're trying to get into a physical game because your body's not ready for it. Your body doesn't know what to expect and you're probably, you know, not used to you know, finishing your blocks, like you said.
So one thing I would say that I would take away, because I have a whole different philosophy on why offensive line play has deteriorated over the last couple of years. The first thing I want to say about this comment is I can see where he's coming from. The problem with watching out for, say, the freshness of the players, getting them through an entire season, there's it's a what would you call it? It's where you have to give up something to get something, right? So they're getting the, you know, the less padded practices, so they'll have be fresher throughout the season. But what you're compromising by doing that is you compromise the refinement of the fundamentals of the position for the most part. I think the last couple of years we've seen some tackling issues on defense.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then you see the offensive line play, really the fundamentals of, you know, keeping the defense out of the backfield for the most part on most teams has been an issue. But my philosophy on this, and I think the bigger issue here is that when you're in college, a lot of college offenses are designed to move the ball quickly. All right. A lot of college offenses are spread offenses. So with that being said, the nuances of a spread offense is, you know, you're in the shotgun, you get the snap. It's basically a half field read. All right. It's a half field read, and you have the ball, you have it maybe 2-3 seconds, and then the ball's out. Right. So offensive linemen in college football aren't asked to do the same things that you would see them do in the pros. And so when you get offensive linemen through the draft now, their skills are a lot less refined going into the National Football League. And then you compound it with the lack of padded practices, and then you really have a problem with developing the young offensive linemen's fundamentals that weren't fully developed in a college system that was designed to just throw the ball all around the field and not necessarily designed to hold blocks till the whistle or, pull, trap, all those things that offensive linemen do in the National Football League, for sure.
So, but that could go back to coaching in college, though, because anytime you have, you know, half-padded practices or non-padded practices, those are supposed to be the days that you practice the fundamentals and the technique, and you're supposed to, you know, an offensive lineman, because I play offensive line sometimes, but mostly I play defensive line later on when I was in college.
I think you're missing the thing that I'm trying to point out here. It's not that they don't work on the fundamentals.
Just,
I think that the fundamentals
that they're style of play.
The fundamentals that they're asked to hone in college are things that they don't need in the pros. They're things that nobody in the pros would ask an offensive lineman to do, because a lot of getting receivers open and getting runs blocked in the National Football League is you run stretch plays, you run counters, you run play action passes where the ball's, you know, you have 6, 8, 10-step drops where the quarterback has the ball in his hand 4, 5, 6 seconds at a time. And so that's a lot different. And when you're blocking premier pass rushers like Von Miller or Ansah from the Detroit Lions or J.J. Watt from the Houston Texans, those kind of guys, you have no chance to block those guys for 6-7 seconds if you don't have proper fundamentals and proper technique. And it's just taking so long for new offensive linemen to develop those fundamentals and technique that you need to succeed in the NFL, because they're just plainly not taught in college. They're not taught the way they should be taught to go into the NFL because of the lack of the pro style system in college football.
Right. And I can see exactly what you're talking about, all that. But I mean, that's something that coaches in the NFL just have to deal with. You know, they're going to have to coach the players up as much as possible. And just, like I said, these whole padded and non-padded practices, they're benefiting the team for longevity, but at the same time, there is a little bit of a hindrance just working on the technique and just learning exactly what it's going to take to work block during a full game or pass rush during a full game. So, not much else I can say. I mean, I don't think it's, like I said, it's a double-edged sword when it comes to that. And like you said, a lot of these linemen just learn how to do one thing in college, and you know, it doesn't translate to the NFL or what they need in the NFL. So,
right.
I don't know, man. It's like I said, it's a double-edged sword. You just got to get on these coaches. These coaches are going to have to coach them up as best they can and do what they can to get them ready for Sundays and Mondays.
Yeah, because you know that in college football, everybody wants to win, obviously. I get that, but 9 times out of 10, you win by scoring more points than the other team in college football. You don't win by your defense shutting down the other offense. That's not how it works. All right? So that is why you've seen this massive slant in college football to a spread attack and going away from the pro-style offenses. And then you see, that's the worst thing too, is not only do you see the best offensive linemen, but you see the best quarterbacks and the best wide receivers. They all go to these spread-style systems, number one, because it's basically steroids for your numbers, you know?
Right.
And then you have quarterbacks that don't develop in the pocket or under center like they should for being prepared for the NFL.
Right, they definitely don't.
And then you have receivers that run basically vertical routes instead of learning the complete route tree. And so it's causing a massive, I would say, disconnect between getting you ready for the NFL and being successful in college football when it used to be they were one and the same not too long ago, before we went to this massive shift to a spread offense, you know, shotgun attack.
That's just because it became a passing league. You know, everybody wanted to see the flashy plays. They wanted to see people throw the ball downfield, big plays, scoring a lot of points. I mean, that's just, they started giving people what they wanted to see. And, you know, I don't know, it just got so much away from defense. You know, I don't even know how to explain it, man. Everybody just wants to score points now, just like you said. That's pretty much what it became. It's a passing league. Everybody just wants to score more than the other thing. They're just hoping that their defense can stop an offense every once in a
while. Yeah, sometimes in these games, especially in the Big 12, which is local to us, you see games where if your defense gets four or five stops, you got a chance to win the game just because that's how prolific your offense is. You just need four or five stops from your defense the whole entire game, and you got a chance to win.
And, you know, I mean, like the college we went to, Sam Houston State, I mean, they're kind of living by that mentality right now. I think they're the number one scoring offense in the country, but they also got one of the worst defenses right now. Mm-hmm. And they're saying if we could get our defense to stop you three or four times a game, we're going to score pretty much 90% of our drives.
Right.
We're going to score 48 points, and hopefully our defense can hold you to 30 or less.
Yeah, and that's kind of the way college football has shifted. And I think that the influences of guys like Chip Kelly and Gus Malzahn and people like that, Kevin Sumlin, Major Applewhite, those guys, Urban Meyer, they've adapted with the times, and they've gone to the spread offenses, and they've been very successful doing it, and it'll just be interesting. Like, coaches like Nick Saban are a dying breed. Nick Saban wins playing defense and controlling the clock. That's how he wins. And he just has better athletes than you everywhere else.
Right.
But at the end of the day, he wins old school, and coaches like that are a dying breed. And it'll be interesting to see how the NFL adapts to the fact that they're getting less refined talent coming into their draft, specifically in the lineman position and the quarterback position as well.
Absolutely right.
And so since this is getting posted on Thursday, we want to go ahead, and I know there's a Thursday night game for the NFL. The Los Angeles Rams play the San Francisco 49ers. This game won't be part of our weekly five-pack of picks, but I did want to kind of get your insight on what you kind of think that, how you think that game will go, and who do you give the edge to in that one?
I don't know, man. The 49ers are just not a good football team from what I can see. I just think that the Rams, I was a little surprised that they lost last week. But if they can get Todd Gurley going and Jared Goff can play, you know, spread the ball a little around. And like I said, if Sammy Watkins can come into himself, I mean, they should win this game pretty easily, even if it is played down the street in San Francisco. So I just don't think that San Francisco is just a good football team, and I don't think they're going to have the firepower to win.
I can't wait for next year. Kirk Cousins will be a San Francisco 49er. Mark my words on that one. Kirk Cousins will be quarterbacking the San Francisco 49ers. But going into this matchup, yeah, they're just woefully overmatched in most positions. They have Brian Hoyer as their quarterback. We know firsthand that Brian Hoyer has some limitations as a quarterback. The Los Angeles Rams defense is pretty decent. They're not great, but they're pretty decent.
Man, I got a monster Aaron Donald right there on the defense.
No, I don't disagree with that. And I like the development of Jared Goff. I like the development that they've, you know, surrounded him with some decent weapons for him to kind of be successful. And Todd Gurley's a monster. I think that he'll get a lot of tough yards in this one, and I think that they'll win a close game, maybe a one touchdown game tonight in the Thursday night matchup.
Yeah, I could definitely agree with that. Yeah, I don't know. I would say it might even be a little bit more comfortable than that. It might be maybe two touchdowns.
Okay. One more thing I wanted to touch on with the NFL. As we move forward, we'll get to our weekly five-pack of picks. That'll be on the Friday episode of the podcast as we head into the weekend. I wanted to touch on what are some games. Give me two or three games this weekend in pro football that you're most looking forward to watching.
Most looking forward to watching, just kind of looking at the schedule here. One is kind of just jumping out at me right now is Atlanta. The Falcons going to Detroit is one. That's definitely going to be a pretty good game, I believe.
I hate to be the spoiler, but I will tell you that one will be on our five pack of picks for sure.
Definitely. And also, you know, another game that jumps out at me right now looking at this. Well, actually, I see a couple that are jumping out at me. It's got Tampa Bay at Minnesota, and then you got Kansas City at the Chargers.
I'm really interested to see if Sam Bradford is back for that one.
Yeah, we'll definitely see. I mean, it definitely changes things if he's not there or, you know, if he is there. You know, if he's not there, then definitely you're going to – I'm giving that a very close game, Minnesota and Tampa Bay already. I think Jameis Winston, he didn't really have a chance to get going last week. I think he's going to try to get going a little bit more this week. Doug Martin is still out. I think he has two more games to sit.
Yeah.
If Sam Bradford is there, that's going to be a very close game, and that game is going to come down to how well Dalvin Cook plays.
Right.
So – as of right now, that one jumps out at me. Then, you know, like I said, Kansas City at the Chargers. I think the Chargers right now are 0-2. You know,
yep.
They've had a close game last week that they lost. I think that they're a pretty good, they're a decent team, and I think that they could upend Kansas City since they are playing at home. It is a possibility. So I think that that's a game that we got to look out for. I'm a hometown boy, so I'm just willing to see. I'm waiting to see how Deshaun Watson is going to do in Foxborough this week. You know, I saw Bill O'Brien earlier. He said he's got a lot of confidence. I mean, he did say that the Patriots do have a great record at home, whether it's against a rookie quarterback or any quarterback. I mean, if you look over the last 13 seasons,
they don't lose many home games.
They got an amazing record at home, whether you're a rookie quarterback or you're an experienced quarterback, so it really doesn't matter. But, I mean, he's showing confidence. He's saying that Deshaun is working real hard. So, I mean, those are the games I'm looking at. Tampa Bay, Minnesota, Houston, New England, Kansas City at the Chargers, and Atlanta at Detroit.
Yeah, those are some pretty good games to watch. A couple of them that I can't wait to see. I can't wait to see the Atlanta-Detroit game. I think that's going to be a great game. I want to see how Atlanta goes on the road and plays. And I want to see if Matt Stafford's for real. I mean, he's had two very good games to start the season. I want to see if this guy can lead his team to, say, an 11-5, 12-4 type of record. And it looks like they have all the pieces in place to do it. It'll just be up to the quarterback executing down the stretch for sure. Tampa Bay, Minnesota, that's an excellent choice. I think that's going to be a great game. Minnesota's tough to beat when they're at home. That new stadium, U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis, is rocking when they play at home. And so it'll be interesting to see if Dalvin Cook can play well and maybe Bradford's back for that one and they can protect Bradford. Bradford looks really good when he has time to throw the football. Obviously, I'm like you from Houston, hometown team. I'll be watching that game. Not so much because I think the Texans will win that game. I think they'll get beat. But I do think that I'm more intrigued by, are we going to get to see some development from Deshaun Watson? Are they going to open the offense up a little bit? Are they going to put him in positions where he gets to make decisions that aren't necessarily one read and throw the football? I want to see him kind of exposed a little more to see how much he's grasping of the offense and see if he's developing in that area. Another game that I'm really interested in seeing is the New York Giants at the Philadelphia Eagles. If the New York Giants go 0-3 to start the season, they will be the most talented 0-3 team I've ever seen in the NFL. I mean, they are loaded on offense. They are loaded on the front line of the defense and in the secondary. And if they can't manage to get a win, especially at Philadelphia, and that'll be a tough game.
Wentz is playing great.
It's no easy feat to go into the link and get a win. So I can't wait to see how the Giants respond, how Eli responds to the criticism his head coach laid on him in his post-game press conferences this week. It'll be interesting to see. And then I can't wait for the night game on Sunday, Oakland at Washington. I want to see how that team goes from the West Coast to the East Coast and if they can go handle business. Washington's not an easy place to play. It'll be a tough place to go in there and get a win. FedEx Field's always pretty tough in Landover, Maryland. So I want to see if Derek Carr is for real and if he can go on the road and get a big victory against the Washington Redskins.
And, I mean, there's a lot of games this week. And then also, if you look down at Monday, you know, you got Dallas. How are they going to react after getting blown out by the Broncos and going to Arizona? What are they going to do? How are they going to respond? So, I mean, it's a lot of games up this week that are going to have some big implications moving forward in the season. I mean, also, you got, you know, Seattle. How is Seattle going to react going down to Tennessee? Because Tennessee looked great last week against the Jaguars and the Jaguars who destroyed the Texans in week one. So, and then also, I mean, we got another big game that's highlighted. You know, we got the New Orleans Saints going down to Carolina. I'm very anxious to see how the Saints are going to, you know, do that game, whether they're going to turn their season around because they're 0-2 right now going to Carolina, who's 2-0. And, you know, Carolina's been a favorite team of yours. You had them marked on your list, you know, starting out the season that they were going to do very well this year. I mean, there's a lot of interesting games, and you got Cleveland and Indianapolis. Somebody's always got to go in that game.
Snorefest.
Somebody's got to get – but we got to see. Somebody's got to get a win in that game. You know, somebody's got to get a win. You know, and then also you got the like I said, you got Monday night. I mean, how the Cowboys going to respond going down to Arizona after getting beat down by the Broncos. Then you got Seattle and Tennessee. I mean, there's a lot of games. This is going to be a very, very interesting weekend, and I can't wait. I can't wait, especially since I didn't even get to watch football last week.
Yeah, absolutely, and it'll be interesting. I think you and I will be talking back and forth while the games are going on, kind of getting our opinions on what's going on football Sunday and especially on college football Saturday. Now we move kind of to a more tragic note. If you haven't seen the news recently, there was a player for Midwestern State University that passed away on Tuesday as a result of injuries he sustained to his neck while making a tackle on Saturday. His team was playing Texas A&M Kingsville here locally close to us. Kevin, if I could get kind of your thoughts on, you know, just you and I have both played football. There's been in recent years a bigger awareness as to what the potential risks are in playing football. And so my thought on this is, first off, it's a very tragic situation. You never want to see anyone lose their life playing a game that they love, you know, going to school, being a student athlete, getting a degree. My thoughts and prayers are with his family and
absolutely
and all that. But I just want to kind of touch on, does this not, a situation like this, would it help bring more awareness to the violence and the physical nature of football? Or is football too ingrained in our society to kind of let things like this that happen affect the overall thought process of how we regard football? As a whole,
I mean, it's kind of tough to say. I mean, everybody know football is a dangerous sport. You know, I've dealt with this. I've seen guys get neck injuries. I've been on teams where guys have got neck injuries. So I mean, everybody knows it's a violent sport and it's dangerous to play. I've seen, you know, I've known mothers who won't even sign permission slips to allow their sons to play. I don't know, man. It's just a tragic thing. I don't think it's going to – I mean, it just has to bring more awareness. You know, we have to teach these kids to tackle We have to ingrain in them how to tackle properly. We have to, you know, do drills over and over. Man, keep your head up. Do not lead with your head. Do not do things like that. But, you know, it's just a tragic thing, man. I don't know. I don't even know how to react to this. It's just such a sad story, man, to see a young kid like this lose his life. I don't even know how old he was. I think he was, what, 21, I believe?
Man, yeah, I think so.
It's just a sad situation, man. So, I mean, it's just – we just have to go back, like, and teach fundamentals and just, you know, keep doing tackling drills over and over again. I mean, but – I mean, hey, man, it's just a tragic situation. It's just hard to take in, you know, because I've seen this – I mean, I've seen this happen right in front of me, you know, so.
Yeah, it's a tough situation for sure. The one thing I will say about it is, I mean, you and I have both played football. I'm – soon we'll be faced with the decision of my son, if he wants to play football, I will have to grapple with the risks involved in playing football. It's something that I did. It's something that I loved to do. Right. I think playing football and being a part of a team taught me a lot of life lessons that I still Absolutely. Utilize today. But the once again, we go back to with any compromise, you have to give something up. And if you compromise your health, you're giving up your health if you play football. That's just the way it works. Potentially, you could have lifelong ramifications for playing a game that I know you and I both love, and right. A lot of people as they grow up will come to love the game of football. But once again, the cost of doing something that you love is there are risks generally Absolutely. Associated with football. And so the best thing I can say is, like you said, we have to do a better job of minimizing the risks. One of those being at a young age, make sure you teach in youth football and in junior high, middle school, and as part of their development, you teach how to properly tackle. You don't lead with the crown of your head. That's how injuries happen. I know that I've done extensive research on the concussion situation involving football, and that's my biggest concern for my son is whenever he gets older and if he wants to play football, is there an opportunity that he could have lifelong maybe migraines from taking the punishment of playing football? The players are only getting bigger, stronger, and faster. So
absolutely, and you know that's the risk that you run because man, I've hurt my knee, I've hurt my shoulder, and you know some of that stuff still pains me today. You mm-hmm. know sometimes I get out of bed and I just you know my shoulder is just in pain or my knee is in pain. I'm limping getting out of bed. You know, it's definitely something you know you got to think about if you're really gonna push and try to make a career within football. So
yeah, I was whenever I was in high school and in junior high and stuff, I played quarterback. So I took an awful lot of rough hits, not only in games but in practice. You know, when you're an underclassman or when you're coming up through you know high school, middle school, as a freshman, sophomore, if you're not on the varsity or if you are on the varsity and you're at the bottom of the depth chart, you are the practice squad.
Scout team,
and the defense is not told, hey, don't hit you. The defense is told, make plays, you know. And so you're taking the full weight of the beating in practice. And I think sometimes for me, the practices early on in my high school career, because I was on varsity pretty early. Early on in my high school career, it was more dangerous for me to go to practice than it was to actually be in a game type atmosphere. The games were truly one of the easier aspects for me. But on that note, I have done some significant research into like safer equipment, specifically regarding yeah. head injuries. And right. there is a new company that has brought out a new line of helmets, and that's something that I'm very interested in. It's something that as technology advances and players advance, it's our job as a society to kind of keep up with how the players are getting bigger, faster, and stronger. And we've got to make sure technology keeps up with that. And that'll be a decision that I guess every parent in America has to make, that when their kid wants to go try to play sports or play football in particular, because football is a we talk about it all the time. Football is a collision sport. It's not a contact sport. Contact sports are basketball, you know. But if you want to play a collision sport, you got to be prepared for some of the risks involved. Unfortunately, there's risks to play a game that we all love. The man Robert Graves, he unfortunately paid the ultimate price for doing something that by all accounts he loved to do, and that was play football. And he's gone way too soon for sure.
Absolutely, man. Just tragic, man.
And on on that note, we'll go ahead and we will talk about some of the games that are going on this weekend. You made a comment earlier to me about how you didn't realize that South Florida was ranked number 21 in the country.
Yeah, I did not know that.
Old coach Charlie Strong has gone there, and he has instilled some toughness in South Florida. And so they play tonight on Thursday night. So my question for you is, do they protect the home field and get a win against Temple?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, I really didn't even know they were ranked. I haven't been able to, keep up with them. I don't know. I mean, I'm hoping that they could get a good win. I mean, I don't really know who too much is on that team. Like I said, I haven't really kept up with them too much out in that conference down there. So I would hope that they'd be able to protect home field. I mean, they're a ranked team, and Temple's coming in. Temple has had some solid teams over the last decade, but I would hope that South Florida can take care of business at home on a Thursday night game.
There's a couple of really good games I want to kind of touch base with you on. For a lot of the conferences, conference play has started or is starting this week. And so a couple of matchups I wanted to touch with you on. In the Big 12, a big one. Number 16 TCU is at number 6 Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State and the quarterback Mason Rudolph has looked excellent this year. Their offense seems to be as high powered as ever under Mike Gundy, the coach there. And so do you think that Gary Patterson and his TCU Horned Frogs can take that defense, go on the road, and get a victory in Stillwater, Oklahoma?
Okay, coming from a guy who has played in Stillwater before, that stadium is very, very loud. The fans are right on top of you when you're playing. I've seen Oklahoma State play one game. I have not been able to catch a full game with TCU. With that defense, defense does win championships, but I think that looking at Oklahoma State, I think that their offense is a little bit more high-powered than what TCU may be able to handle. So I think that it's going to be a close game, but with them being in Stillwater and Oklahoma State being at home, I think Oklahoma State probably still wins this game.
Another game going on in the SEC that involves two ranked teams. Number 17, Mississippi State, going on the road to Georgia to play the Georgia Bulldogs. Mississippi State coming off a monster win against LSU last week where they basically dominated the game. Do you think that they can take that success and go on the road and try to get a big victory against the Georgia Bulldogs on Saturday night?
I'm just saying, I think that they definitely have potential. They have potential to go out there and win that game in Georgia. But I've been such a big Georgia fan over the years. Georgia has always been my sleeper team. Well, not really a sleeper team. They've always been my favorite team within the SEC. I've always wanted them to do well. Nick Chubb, I've always been a fan of him. I'm just so happy that he was able to make a comeback after that bad knee injury. So, I mean, if I have to pull for a team, it's going to be a very close game, but I hope Georgia pulls it out.
All right, no problem. And then another game that I like that's on the schedule, a rematch of the Pac-12 championship game last year. Washington, the number 7 team in the country, quarterback Jake Browning is looking every bit of as good as he looked last year. They will go on the road to face Colorado. We all know that Colorado is a tough place to play due to the altitude. Do you think that Washington has trouble at Colorado? Do you think Colorado's looking for a little bit of revenge for losing the Pac-12 championship game last year?
I mean, they can look for revenge all they want, but I think Washington's going to be a little bit too much for them. I think, I think the altitude might affect them a little bit later on in the game, but I still think that Washington wins this game and very comfortably. They're just too good of a team for Colorado to handle right now.
But we'd like to thank you for joining us for the No Gray Area podcast. Myself, Derek Cooper, and Kevin Smith always enjoy talking sports. Hope you guys enjoy listening to the talk that we give you. on the topics that we think mean the most during the week. And we look forward to having you back on tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to today's No Gray Area podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast via iTunes and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. This podcast has been produced and distributed by Cooper Sports Network. All rights reserved.